June 23rd, 1925. What decade am I in? 2019. And I am driving on an all-too-familiar road. Going from Tucumcari to Fort Dallas for yet another exciting week of keeping Eastern New Mexico University's business systems and that's running. And I gotta say that it's a good week. I need to make a couple of calls here soon about the prospect of just simply selling our house in Portales to just business interests who will turn around and make some money off of it. I think it has to do with being in a rush. The rush really for us is that I don't need the expense of going through a long protracted sale of this house. You know, you have to keep all the utilities on. You know, you have to hook everything up, you have to make everything work and right. And that ends up costing several $100s. And of course, I still have to make a mortgage payment, which is $600 a month. And it's like, you know, I don't really have the resources to do this long term, honestly. And so, there's an interesting opportunity. She's just kind of not wanting to take it. She wants to be able to sell the place full price. I'm saying, Lisa, I said, you're getting nervous about every paycheck. It seems like for some reason we're living paycheck to paycheck again. I do not understand the issue particularly. I really don't get it myself. But that's kind of the situation we're running on. And under those circumstances, yeah, selling this house and just walking away, whether there's any money in it or not, is preferable. You know, like I was telling her, I said, if your ship is listing badly because the balance is wrong, you got too much of a load, I said the most important thing is to get rid of that extra load. Get it out, you know, get it out. And then all of a sudden everything kind of smooths out. Still making money. Still doing what needs to be done. My biggest concern is that when the moment arrives that my friend Brenda finally puts in a retirement letter, you know, tells everybody that she's retiring, that we'll still have this house sitting there and just, you know, if it's just the same amount of money or if it's a little bit less, the decision will just have to be made that I won't take it. And I really do not want to be in that straitjacket just saying money, 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 money. It's got to be about money every single solitary time. One of the things from doing this was to make it so that we can make decisions based on what's good and what's right rather than based on what is the most financially advantageous. And, you know, I may be the wrong one, you know. to think for 1 second that decisions should never be made that aren't fiscally advantageous to you on every side. Anyway, this is typical. There's always been a big difference between Lisa and I. How to handle these things. And so, yeah, I got a couple of people to call and talk to about this situation. And I really do hope that they end up just saying, hey, we'll just buy out your loan, you know, we'll pay off your loan, give you a little bit of money to walk away with, and, you know, have a nice day. And it's like, oh, you know, we're going to talk Lisa into it, but I think of the prospects right there. I don't know. Lisa's logic and mine are completely different. And holding out is for me, is a $500 bite every single time we do this. Every single time. And,
well, I'm not going to talk about that. It's not complimentary to talk about that. So I'm not gonna. It's making Melrose turn. Now we're headed to Melrose. 28 miles from where we are. It's a beautiful day. There's some interesting clouds in the sky. Coming up on a little sunny spot here. It's going to get up into the 90s today. Typical day in this part of the world at this particular time. Climate change, I hate using that term, but I guess I'm gonna. It's kind of in our favor here. The last 10 years, it's been getting more and more humid here. Now, doubling our humidity from like 3 or 4% up to 6 to 8%, you know, it doesn't make it sweltering here much. You know, it makes it so that some dry land farming that hasn't worked for over 70 or 80 or even 90 years in this part of the country, all of a sudden starts kind of getting a little more viable. Interesting that it's happening right at the same time that a lot of land is being bought up by big corporations. And I think we're getting far more corporatized. The that's when all this stuff is going to kind of get a little bit better. This is the time when family farms can see kind of a turn and say, wait, I might actually be able to be viable. This is the time when it's like, no, you're not going to be viable. You know, you're screwed. It's over. It's not going to happen. You know, because they're not going to be family farms anymore. They've already been all bought out. You know, a couple of good droughts and the family farm just kind of folds up. Gets put on the auction block. It's some more corporate sort. Gets all the land and all the equipment for a song. Is it evil? No. That's just the way it goes. You know? Often a farm family will be allowed to stay on the land as a tenant. It really ends up being everybody becoming kind of a serf. We are really going back to a form of serfdom. Where you're basically owned by a lord, a master. If you're lucky, you get a master who basically says, you know, just keep working the land like you always did. And just take my cut. And you can profit off the rest. That's a good lord. And the other, you know, and then you can do that with the kind of controls your life, tells you what to do, tells you what you're, you know, just kind of runs your life. We have the technology these days to be far more controlling. I'm not saying that back in the old days, back in the medieval times or middle times, that there weren't lords that wanted to be more controlling. They just couldn't find a very rational way of doing it. You know, there was not enough tracking and monitoring available to be able to keep their people doing exactly what was wanted. You know, where you can rather treat people like cattle and tell them, you know, you're going to do this, you're going to do this. But the technology is getting there. And an interesting circumstance. You would think that we had made all this progress. You know, and people say, oh no, we could never, that can never happen again. We put things in place to make sure that never can happen again. Or we simply evolved out of it. And every time somebody says that, some 2,000-3,000-year-old problem that's always been a bug out. Sometimes it ebbs and flows. Sometimes it gets bigger, sometimes it's smaller. All of a sudden it's just there again. You know, and you're going, I thought we got rid of slavery. And you go, no, it just changed the forms. And, you know, serfdom, people say, oh, well, we got rid of serfdom, everybody, you know, everybody, we have democracy everywhere, yeah, that'll solve it, that is the ticket. The funny thing is, it says, we find out that democracy doesn't solve that problem. In fact, it makes it far more entrenched and far harder to do anything about. You know, it used to be that if you had a bad master, you might be able to wait around and their kid that ultimately takes over the lordship, they might be a different sort of person and things would get demonstrably better. Or, you know, in the United States, at the beginning, the founders, it was very fashionable to give up your slaves, to emancipate them. Now, you usually emancipate them on your death, because your livelihood depended on slave labor. But you would teach your children a different way of being. You know, they become a tradesman that doesn't deal in these kinds of things. And they don't need slaves. And so, yeah, it isn't part of your grant to them when they, upon your death, you don't give them, you know, they give you so many acres of land, so many of this, so much of that, and, you know, and 18 slaves. This stuff ebbs and flows. It doesn't honestly go away. There's always ways around all this stuff. There's supposed to be a way not to be in indentured servitude. And guess what? It doesn't matter. We found out that being in servitude does not require slavery or indenture. It's not needed. You can have somebody who's just as much your slave, or just have a certain number of slaves. They can be fluid coming in and out of your enterprise, you know. But yeah, you know, you go, well, I'm the master over everything, and the only claim to the fact that it's not slavery or not indenturedness is the fact that there is no specific person who's the master. You know, it's corporations, a board of directors. You know, it's shareholders. If it's a government, it's a legislature or something else along those lines. There's not one person you can redeem and say, well, it's going to be a good king. And when you have, let me tell you, the one form of government that's far better than democracy could ever be, is a good monarchy. Now, the tricky part is that monarchies tend to sour over time. And if you have a good one, be ready. There might not be a good one to follow it. I think England has a pretty good system, a mix of a monarchy and a democracy, particularly a parliament, a representative parliament, and I think it does pretty good. I'm a big fan of Brexit. Now you guys say, oh, that's easy for you to say. You don't have to live with it. You go, man, America's been in a constant state of of relative independence and a good and good sovereignty. Every time, thank goodness for me, my thought is that I'm glad that when there's like, oh, we need to become beholden to a larger group, a larger organization, United Nations, whatever, that the United States says, oh, excuse me, screw you, because we will not be beholden to any of this. These things become tools for our domination of the world. The great part is, we're not, I'd like to say that we're not interested in the subjugation of other lands, particularly. We do want to live in peace, and we want to ensure that through diplomatic means. It kind of goes down to make kind of military too. I'm not very excited about that. Anyway, a democracy like we have in the United States is very apt to systemic low-level corruption. Autocrats can do high-level corruption. If your government's small enough, most people don't really care if they're corrupt because they're really not taking a whole lot of their people. If a country of 20 million people, for instance, has a sultan or a king or a warlord who kind of runs it, and let's cut it off in a lifestyle. If you split that up 20 million ways, it's not really that much of a burden. And to be honest, if the only, real requirement of that thing is that you don't speak against the king, you don't speak against the sultan, and try to stir up an insurrection. It sounds like that buys you a lot of liberty. The whole point of the United States was that there were going to be three competing branches of government that would constantly wrestle with each other to get things done, and out of all this, liberty fell. Liberty dropped out, almost like a dropping. The crap coming out the back end is that your government was too small and too wound up in fighting amongst themselves to be able to really do much to you. Now that it came to find out that there was going to be a gentleman's agreement, they would ultimately just fight a little bit, and when push came to shove, they were all kind of on the same page and saying, hey, the problem here, with a king, you would have a king in his court, wasn't necessarily a large group of people. And yeah, they were wealthy off of the labors of those beneath them. But now with these huge governments, these huge bureaucracies going on, and everybody now, here was the funny thing. Back when I was a kid, working for the government was probably not very interesting to most people because the pay wasn't very good.
I was okay for some people because the benefit package was usually excellent. You know, you got more time off work, you had pretty good working conditions, not a whole lot was asked of you. You weren't ever going to get wealthy. You weren't going to do well, but you weren't going to be absolutely poor. And that was kind of a gentleman's trade-off. You could go to work for government, and it was kind of a guaranteed job for life. You wouldn't be paid a ton, but you'd be okay. They'd take care of you. Now that's not true. Most of the best paid jobs are government jobs. I can't think, only on a couple of occasions have I not worked, basically, for government, either as a subcontractor or working for them directly, and I've been pretty well doing it. You know, the times when I worked for the military, wow, I did really well. That's why I tell people in my book, I don't know if it's the book, but it's an excerpt from the book. It's certainly available on the website. How to make good money. It's not about being wealthy, but it's about, you know, being concerned about money. I tell people that the best thing to do is to go be in the military for one enlistment or two or three. If you find that you really just kind of are okay with being in the military, you kind of like that lifestyle, stay in there until retirement. Not a bad deal at all. And, but once you've been in the military, this is then when you decide to leave, go into contracting. The pay is significantly better. The benefits are okay. Working for a contractor rather than working for the government itself, and still, you know, the benefits aren't as good. Government benefits are far better. But you make up for that they don't actually pay you as much. Well, let me tell you, it isn't the big thing it used to be. Now you actually make quite a bit of money. In addition, you know, like I said, there is never some big trade-off. Although I can't say the benefits now are as good as they once were working for the government. Back in the old days, they practically just took care of, you know, well, we'll pay for all your medical care, we'll pay for everything else. You know, give you good service. And they don't do that necessarily.
I don't know if y'all want to count the watch.
Anyway, but yeah, in the private sector, it used to be much more lucrative. You know, you were making far more money, and that's not true so much anymore. It's like in the old days, let me tell you. I used to have a money market savings account, basically a checkbook with some restrictions on it, and I was getting 14% interest on it. I put money in that account, and oh my gosh, you know, if I just left it there, that was a pretty good increase. Now, the amount of money you get if you put it in the savings account is almost purposeless. It's like 0.5% interest, which doesn't even, you know, doesn't work. I think it's funny, though, because while you're making that much, a credit card company is able to charge 24, 25, 26% interest. And just, you know, and that's much higher than it used to be back in the day. Back when I got my first credit card, it was, what, maybe 6% interest. And, you know, now it's confiscatory. They used to have what were called payday loans. I truly still have them. And they would often charge 20, 25, 30% interest to kind of float you through until your next payday if you have a lot of loans. And we're in Melrose. And now your normal credit card company is just as confiscatory as they once were. They were for a little while tightening up who could get credit cards, keeping the interest rate low, and that didn't seem to be good marketing. And the ones that charge really high interest, but were very, very easy, almost everybody could get their credit cards, you know, the interest rate is how they make their money. If one out of every four or five people are going to default on their credit card debt, then yeah, they have to boost the rate to make up for the fact that there's going to be a pretty high default rate. Now, I think that they actually did that. I think they actually did a combination of they really boosted the rate, and then they started really not really clamping down on people. So it's like, wait a minute, as soon as I can get that rate up, then I can start making the whole thing kind of work in my favor, you know. But they don't do it by cutting you off. They do it by having kind of an interesting multi-tiered rate system, you know. If they think you're a pretty good credit risk, they'll give you a better interest rate. If they don't think you are, they'll give you a worse one, you know. 26% interest on you, either you're flat A, unproven, or B, just don't, do that. Now, the credit card company that you're with doesn't tend to change your rate. It's really hard to get them to change the rate. So if you started really low, or with no credit, or with not particularly good credit, and you're at the highest rate, yet you did a good job, they would cut your, the whole idea is that they would cut your rate, but typically the actual company doesn't do that. You just have to find a new credit card that you would prefer having. Which goes to my whole thing of, hey, if you want to make better money, or if you want better conditions or anything like that, you have to change jobs. It's just a simple fact of life. I wouldn't be making the kind of money that I do unless I hopped a few times. It says, if you're waiting for your company to give you raises to get the kind of income you think you need or that you desire, based on just getting pay increase and stuff like that, it's not going to happen very frankly. Anyway, I seem to recall
Like, I worked for New Mexico State University for nearly 9 years. Back in the ops, 2004 to 2013. And in that period, I think I went from making about $35,000 a year up to $44,000. And that took 9 years. You know, sometimes you get pay increases, sometimes you didn't, blah, 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 blah. All these things like that. But, okay, from 2013 up until 2015, I went from making that $43,000, $44,000 up to making $77,000. And I did that predominantly by changing jobs on a regular basis and not, you know, and not just staying put. And, it was just stunning. And, this is the absolute difference between 2 or 3 years of taking advantage of opportunities rather than just the gradual slow rise of waiting around for pay increases and stuff like that. Was just immense. Just crazy. You know? And I didn't just change my income. I made these kinds of things change how you're perceived. I don't think people were very confident of my abilities until I got interesting opportunities and got paid a lot more. And then all of a sudden people said, whoa, shoot, this guy's pretty good. And they go, yeah. And the more important part is to realize that these things are true. You know, they say, well, I don't know why you're going into corporate extension service. And you go, because I know a whole lot of things by experience, as opposed to just kind of hoping that they're true, or having some research person say, oh yeah, you can say that, that's okay. You go, I see the time. Really doing pretty good. No, I go from personal experience. I'm not that amazing because I'm that, you know, woo, amazing. Like that, but I did take advantage of opportunities, and I got some skills that were kind of difficult to find, and found places that would pay you more if you have those sorts of skills. That was really nice. Of course, I tend to take jobs other people don't want for various reasons. I don't understand the motivations of a lot of people. And I'm not actually going to say that they're really dangerous, quote unquote dangerous jobs, but they're inconvenient jobs, or in interesting circumstances. There is a lot of money to be made by going and doing things that other people kind of go, oh, I can go. And you go, I will. Okay, that's up to you. And you go, yeah, and I make a lot more money than you. That's an interesting brand of person that will do those kinds of things. Honestly.
Anyway, so it's an interesting run of life that I've been able to do all these things. You know, Lisa's really upset because I've been not making as much money as I have in the past. And she does not seem to understand that we're buying a lot of positive circumstances off of this stuff that I did for just a few years. It really pumped up my income. And you know, am I still making a lot more money than I did before when I came to do the stuff I do? I make quite a bit more. And all really good. We'll see how good I do making sure that I'm compensated well for what I'm doing. You know, I said I really want to be paid a little bit more than what I'm being paid now. So, if you guys want somebody good, I can be something good, and I'll do good things, and we'll be able to even though the bulk of my work will be doing this stuff for one county, I'll take the opportunity use me in other capacities. Yeah, you get there for this now, but we can use it for this project and that project. That excites me. You know, yeah, can't take part. I can't get it for free. I just don't know this for free. give me this much. No, you don't.